I'm Al Filreis, and this is Poem Talk at the Writer's House, where I have the pleasure of convening three friends in the world of contemporary poetry and poetics to collaborate on a close but not too close reading of a poem. We'll talk, maybe even disagree a bit, and perhaps open up the verse to a few new possibilities, and we hope gain for a poem that interests us some new readers and listeners. And I say listeners because Poem Talk poems are available in recordings made by the poets themselves as part of our PennSound archive, writing.upenn.edu/PennSound. Today, I'm joined here in Philadelphia at the Kelly Writer's House in our third floor Garrett studio by Laura Elrick, whose books include Propagation, Fantasies in Permeable Structures, and Skincerity, a favorite book of mine, Laura, and whose psychogeographically inspired research and performance works include The Oppositional Cartography, Blocks Away, a video poem, Stalk, and a sound work, Five Audio Pieces for Doubled Voice, and, Laura, a new book. What's the new book?
Well, you mentioned it, Al. It's The Propagation. It came out at the end of 2012.
So, terrific. Yeah. Thank you. And also by Rachel Blau Duplessis, critic and poet, whose most recent book-length installment of her long ongoing poem, Drafts, is Surge. Drafts 96-114, whose PennSound page is a treasure trove of recordings of Drafts as well as a lot of other work, and whose Blue Studios poetry and its cultural work among her many books is one I have shelved just above my own writing desk for frequent consultation, and I'll add, a longtime poet of Philadelphia who has done as much to support poets here as anyone. Rachel, you have a new book.
Well, it's Surge, and I'm very pleased to announce that Salt Publishing has brought out what's the final, or perhaps not so final, as you might say, installment of my 26-long, year-long poem, Drafts.
Fantastic. Drafts keeps coming. And that publisher, Salt, has been very helpful getting Drafts out.
It's been a wonderful publisher, including beautiful covers, some of which I've designed.
Fantastic. And by Ray Armantrout, among whose many books are Made to Seem, Next Life, Veil, New and Selected Poems, and recently Money Shot, and of course Versed, which won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Critics Circle Award, who was one of the 10 poets to collaborate on a multi-volume collective autobiography, The Grand Piano, and whose poems have been selected for a ton of anthologies, including the Norton Postmodern Poetry and Best American Poetry in 5 different years. And Ray, tell us about your new book.
My new book is Just Saying, which just came out from Wesleyan.
Just Saying. Welcome back, East. Ray, back to the Writer's House. It's so good to see you.
Thank you.
And Laura, back at the Writer's House after maybe a few years away from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Thank you for making the trip. And Rachel,
thanks for having me
here once again. Always good to see you.
Cross town.
And you walked most of the way.
Yeah.
Well, today we've gathered here to talk about a poem by Catherine Wagner. The poem is called This Is a Fucking Poem. This is a fucking poem, or this is a fucking poem. I don't know which, maybe both. And it can be found in Wagner's 2009 book, My New Job, published by Fence Books. My New Job includes poems from a previously published chapbook called Hole in the Ground, which appeared in 2008, put out by Slack Buddha Press of Oxford, Ohio. A recording of the poem comes from a 2010 reading Wagner gave at Xavier University in Cincinnati, where she read our poem and a number of others from Hole in the Ground, the Hole in the Ground sequence. So here now is Catherine Wagner performing This Is a Fucking Poem.
This is a fucking poem. Don't expect too much. Well, I expect you to go into the fucking human tunnel. I'm going. Pink, grimy, glossed in tabulature, welted and tattooed, and folded in ropey ceiling hangings, but it isn't a room, and bumblingly sliding out, little legs of a little girl, bum on the wall, pink legs sticking out like a hermit crab's. She's coming. Shut her out, the little girl, legs with a little girl, head, mostly eyes, no ears, bug brain, aimless. Send her to school. It's cold, and where should she go? She will eat her legs with her mandibles. Her eyes will retract inside. Stroke her riding hood. Settle down, little. Nobody will hurt you by breaking off your little legs. 6 little legs, if you come.
Okay, who wants to parse the F-bomb in the title? How does it work? Ray, you want to start us off? How does that work, that word?
Well, as you kind of indicated, I mean, it's a pun, or you could hear it two ways. I mean, it's a poem sort of about fucking, or at least about the consequences of fucking. But then also, it's, you know, this is a fucking poem. It's like, it's only a poem. It's just saying. It's
just saying.
You know,
like,
it's
okay. I'm doing it again.
Self promotion. Yeah, it's the kind of abjection of poetry, maybe.
Abjection. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually heard it slightly differently. Sure. I was wondering whether we could even say this word on the air as many times as we may have to say it. Saying it's a fucking poem is like, you know, and then this great way she reads, don't expect too much. Yeah. She gives you this tone of like a kind of realism, vernacular realism. You can't fool me. You know, I'm on it. I'm on it. I'm with you. And what happens is it tends to validate with its tremendous realism, the toughness of the realism, all the surrealism that comes in the imagery to follow. And you don't really, you almost don't read the rest of it as surreal. You read it as really real.
Mm-hmm. Laura, your take on this? Do you have further parsing?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking both of these things. Obviously, if you this is a fucking poem, or this is a fucking poem. And if you read it like that, if you read fucking as an adjective, then it's a poem about fucking, in which case don't expect too much could either mean that poems about fucking are usually not so good or kind of bad poems, or that fucking itself is a boring topic, which reminds me of Foucault's statement that sex is boring. But you could also read it as a gerund, in which case this is a fucking poem. It's going to fuck with you, the reader. So I think it's all three, probably.
Yeah. And the epigraph of the sequence, which was published as a chapbook, which is a pretty coherent set of poems called Hole in the Ground, uses a folk song that refers to a mole in the ground in a folk song. I would root that mountain down, rooting being, of course, of kind of fucking. And so, you know, there you get the poem as kind of enacting the making of the hole in the ground.
But let me just say something about what happens is that it, because the poem isn't only about sexual intercourse, to be a little more polite, or about a bad episode of such.
Like, not at all.
Not at all. It's really stacking a female life, as we all know very well, and I'm just saying it, through the human tunnel, like birth, life experiences, school, you know, self-repression, repression,
we have some
back
hints
to sex.
Of girlhood socialization mm-hmm. throughout the poem. Can mm-hmm. we say what they are, just to be clear? There's the Red Riding Hood. There's the school.
Well, there's seven repeats of the word little.
There's little.
And an
little
illusion.
Little girl legs.
Yeah. Little everything.
Send her to school.
But
does send her to school function?
Well, wait, we haven't... Hold it,
Yeah,
babes.
We want to say more
about
other things.
About little girls.
Do.
Well, she's obviously made monstrous. I mean, you know, there's a monstrosity about the little girl. She's got mandibles. She's got six legs. So there's a kind of monstrosity of the female. So both in the female child and also, I suppose, in the mother, or because, you know, who says, settle down, little, nobody will hurt you mm-hmm. by breaking off your little legs, which is actually very threatening and sort of sadistic. So there's a kind of monstrosity on both sides of what you would take to be the mother-daughter relationship.
I would not only read it as a mother. That's the one, that's my only cautionary note. Mm-hmm. I would say this the you in here, mm-hmm. speak of the word little. The word you is incredibly mobile and is undecidable and actually could be, within the poem, it flips considerably mm-hmm. in its potential reference.
Now, it starts out with kind of addressing the lover or the reader. I expect you to go into the fucking.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's what I like so much about Kathy Wagner's work, because I'm a big fan of her work, is, I mean, I started out talking about female monstrosity because I know that she was inspired by and she likes Sylvia Plath, but the level that Wagner takes it to, I think, is that we are never sure about the identities here. Identity is always in flux. And we, as you say, we never know which side.
More so than in Plath.
Oh, yeah, much more so.
Yeah, so
let's just be clear about the I at the beginning. Is it, well, I expect you. That's an I of the figure doing something to this girl, but it's also a speaker? Or
I read it as the speaker. Well, I, you know, this is a fucking poem. It's just a poem. It's just saying. So don't expect too much. It's almost like a reply to that. A kind of almost annoyed reply to, if I'm reading the don't expect too much as a sort of reference to a Foucauldian kind of, you know,
And at first you almost hear the fucking human tunnel as the poem, but it's also very vaginal.
And
especially in that third stanza, the description of it, pink, which is also sort of monstrous, pink, grimy, glossed, in tabulature. I had to look up in tabulature.
Yeah, what'd you come up with?
It turns out, well, the reading that made the most sense was something on columns. And so then I thought legs, maybe, yeah. But it's like a plinth and columns. It's like Greek architecture.
Hole in the ground throughout the sequence, called Hole in the Ground, is vaginal here and there.
Mm-hmm.
It also is, get me the hell out of here. I need to go somewhere where someone can't get me. It does both of those things.
But, you know, the thing about this miniaturizing, when Laura was saying, don't expect too much, then, well, I expect you to, mm-hmm. and then we were discussing the I and the you, we're sort of in that zone. There's an immediate shift there where the speaker maybe is withdrawing in the second line, but by the third line, well, here's what I expect from you. Mm-hmm. And so you get this wobble between the miniaturizing powers of the weak and the powers of the weak, this powerful figure of the littleness, like the Dickinson type of motif, little, nobody will hurt you. This hinge line break around I'm nobody, who are you? And the thing is, I mean, there are probably four like allusional zones here. One is Plath, absolutely, and the other is Dickinson, and the other is Kafka.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I woke up and I was turned into a little girl bug. You know,
body mortification. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a hint at self-cannibalism, which, of course, you get
absolutely.
In insects.
Absolutely. With Kafka. And then the final one for me is really Little Red Riding Hood.
Yes.
Not only Little Red Riding Hood, but, and this is going to sound...
No, I'm with you.
The Olga Brumas poem, which everybody knows, and it's another sort of feminist classic poem, where it's really clitoral.
Exactly. That is what I thought. I am with that. I mean, stroke her little writing, stroke her right, not even little, stroke her riding hood. I mean, yeah, and who is she addressing there? Who's going to stroke the writing? It's definitely clitoral, and it's definitely sort of what the media calls child abuse, unless it's self-done.
Yeah, and it does Laura? Really strike me in a certain way that there's no partner, there's no other. It seems like a birthing of the self. I mean, the to become orgasmic in a way, one has to push out this insect girl body baby from oneself, which
there is no subject in Stroke Her Riding Hood. We don't know who's doing the stroking.
And that's
above we have she will eat her legs. She will eat her own legs. She will eat the legs of the insectization of herself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I expect you to go into the fucking human tunnel. I'm going. Pink, grimy, glossed in tabulature, welted and tattooed, and folded in ropey ceiling hangings, but it isn't a room, and bumblingly sliding out, little legs of a little girl, bum on the wall, pink legs sticking out like a hermit crab's. She's coming. Shut her out, the little girl, legs with a little girl, head, mostly eyes, no ears, bug brain, aimless.
One thing I noticed, too, just to sort of add a layer onto that, is how many words in the poem reference writing. Or explication. So glossed could mean wet, but it also means, you know, to explain something. Entablature. Even welted and tattooed has this, this image of scarification or body art, writing on the body.
Maybe even send her to school.
Even send her to school. And so I think this is interesting. And I was reading also the human tunnel then as, you know, the symbolic order or discourse, in which case,
even before you get out of this womb thing, it's already written. So you're sliding out of the written womb into the written world where sexual experience is already
scripted.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Or can maybe scripted. We must be a little more optimistic on the radio.
Yeah.
And but the little girl is definitely always under threat. Not only might she bite off her own mandibles, but that nobody will hurt ya. The way it's spelled,
right,
hurt ya, yeah, makes you not believe that no one will hurt her.
Yeah,
you
know? It's the wolf speaking after all.
She's
right.
Danger there, I
yeah,
think.
It's the wolf.
You know? By
who
breaking
is
off your little
disguised
legs.
As a female member of the family.
A grandma.
A grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, almost the wicked stepmother voice from fairy tales or something.
Let's talk about the performance for a second. She performs the poem well, powerfully. Mm-hmm. There's only one maybe nervous laugh line, or maybe just plain old laugh line. Don't expect too much gets mm-hmm. a laugh in the recording. Anything, anybody want to say about the performance of it?
The performance, I noticed that in the book, a little girl bum on the wall / opening, and she didn't read
she
the word opening.
Out.
So.
Know.
Maybe that was an error, which can happen in readings and has, in all of our experience, I'm sure, you know, happened. Mm-hmm. We kind of revise and reading.
What's the significance
or
of the miss?
There's just she added the word, you know, after the reading, but before the book. She
no,
added
this
the
reading came after the book, so it would have been published in both in the chapbook and in this version when she read
okay,
it.
Okay,
well, so we don't know whether she left it out accidentally or deliberately.
If it was deliberate, right. Would it mean something?
I would want to know more about it before I made that judgment. Mm-hmm. I would just like to know more about that whatever the situation it would be.
I could be wrong about this, but especially at the end of the poem, it sounded like Ray Armantrout reading her poems.
Well, it's obviously
we talk about
very
that?
Influenced by Ray. I would just,
I mean,
including
this ending of the poem sounds so much like a Ray Armantrout poem with a phrase from an old story, another voice, nobody will hurt you, comes in. The way it ends, if you come, do you want to comment on that?
I had not thought that, but maybe that's why I like it. I chose her for a Boston Review contest, so I almost
so there
feel
is
like
connection.
I discovered her.
Yeah.
But I had read her in Fence, so I didn't totally discover her. But I can't remember the name of the poem I read in Fence, but it also involved cannibalism. It was something about eating into her father's side. Or there's always something kind of frightening about a Kathy Wagner poem. That's what I like about it.
I think Rachel earlier said that there's Plath and there's Dickinson. Maybe it's a line or a spectrum from Plath to Armantrout, and that this poem is somewhere toward the Armantrout, but using some of those Plathian tropes.
I was hoping that the Ray part, that is the Ray Armantrout aspect, would come up, but I felt a little. Let's
listen to the end of the poem.
I think that
again.
The whole book is under the sign of Ray,
yeah,
and it's certainly
right.
Gained by that.
Let's listen to the end of the poem again, maybe from Stroke Her Riding Hood to the end.
Stroke Her Riding Hood. Settle down, little. Nobody will hurt you by breaking off your little legs, six little legs, if you come.
There's something very cunning about her palimpsest, again, a kind of doubleness of hermit crab and insect together in this poem as the low creatures of whom women, you know, may be one in our, to speak culturally for a second. But you wanted to talk about the ending.
Yes.
Very fast, sure. Very fast punches, totally undecidable. 1, 2, 3, more imperatives like stroke, settle down, seemingly addressed to the you, to the figure of the poem, the girl hermit crab figure, but possibly instructions to the speaker herself. The way that an I is often a you in a poem, you can say instructions to the I often come out in the you form, and it's very, very hard to actually identify the pronouns. Mm-hmm. Who are these pronouns? Who is this you? It seems to veer unbelievably in the poem. And I would not... Ray went very fast to mother, and this is, of course, for me, a possibility. But I also think there are male figures here. There are other women figures here. There are the figures of the self. And the thing, you said it before, Ray, this is Ray again, it wobbles among among the possible identities, to use that word, so fast that it's really it's an amazingly condensed, undecidable poem.
Well, she writes often about motherhood in a very unsentimental way. So that's one reason I went to that.
It's a reading from that.
I totally agree that the pronouns or who she's talking to at any point is really undecidable, which is one thing that's exciting about it. And you could even look back at the end to the beginning when we didn't know if this was going to be a fucking poem or a fucking poem. And, you know, it could be as much about writing the poem as about giving birth or being
born. This is what Laura said. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Laura.
And there's something about the end, nobody will hurt you by breaking off your little legs if you come. So if you come, you're still going to have your six little legs. You're still going to be an insect. You're not going to become human if you come. So you're going to remain crab, insect, wolf, grandma, whatever it is. I also think so this makes me go back into the poem and look at these moments where there are these suggestions of like a sort of sadomasochistic thing happening. Like, for example, in the third stanza where we see the pink, grimy, glossed entablature, welted and tattooed, enfolded in ropey ceiling hangings, but it isn't a room. I mean, of course we can read that as a uterus, but the negative, it isn't a room, of course, brings up the image of a room with ropey ceiling hanging,
right.
Which has this
Don't
kind
think of a pink elephant. Yeah. Right,
right, exactly. Yeah. It's
a dungeon,
you
mean.
Uh-huh. It's an S&M-like thing. And we return to that at the end with the wolf voice saying, you know, nobody's going to hurt you. We won't break off your legs. Mm-hmm. You know, but of course, I don't know.
We're just going to stroke your writing here, but
and
we won't break off your legs.
What does the wolf do? The wolf is seeking to eat the little girl. Mm-hmm.
But the little girl is miraculously not broken up in the wolf's belly, so the wolf gives birth to the little girl afterwards. Interesting.
We could talk about this poem for a long time, but I think what we should do is go around at least one more time to give everybody a chance to say one more thing that they had intended to say but didn't have a chance. Who wants to go first?
Okay, I'll bite on this one, excuse
As
the metaphor.
Were.
There's a way in which a superficial reading of the poem could see it as could be too extractive. And in many ways, many poems allow for the possibility of superficiality like this. Like, is the whole poem a dramatic visualization with characters of the female genitals? So the riddle-solving method, this extractive method, is really like some poems, like Old English poems, many of them are riddles. And it makes, I want to resist this a little bit by saying, you know, I don't like to think of every line, every word as a clue, and here is one answer. The reader becomes the detective, the poet is the criminal, and the poem is the crime to be solved. And I would just like to say that this poem is very deft, it's very witty, it's very bold, and it's a great pleasure. In fact, it has a lot of sociocultural vibration, which we have tracked. But I don't think that any of us here wanted the reductive or the extractive reading. So I'd like to just say that publicly.
Thank you. Ray?
I'm thinking, I guess I thought when I read it about the way Audrey and Rich wrote about female monsters, you know, projected onto the constellations in her poem Planetarium. And I'm thinking about this as a kind of destabilizing, updating view of the sort of the female and the monster, and also of the kind of vagina dentata, because this, you know, the vagina here, which may also be the alimentary canal at the same time, and this and the voice that speaks the poem are all both dangerous and endangered at the same time.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, I read in an interview that Kathy did, I think it was on the Bomb blog, that she thought of this poem as a didactic poem. And I found that really interesting. So to think,
in what ways is it didactic? And I don't know, you know, if I can, if you know, encapsulate it in a sentence, but I do think that there's something about this edge of annihilation. So unlike a sort of humanist view of sex where you would come into an authentic, fully self that's, you know, sexually flowering, there's something about the way that in this poem, you know, there's a message of empowerment in that, you know, one has to stop being afraid of the big O, the big orgasm, becoming orgasmic. But
there's
then
a poem in the sequence called O.
Yeah, yeah. But then the message of empowerment is ultimately coming from the wolf, so whose intention is to eat you. So I don't know. I guess that's sex for you. You know, don't expect too much.
But I see Kathy as much as the wolf as the little girl, and she's both. I mean, cause
right.
She's both.
She's
voices,
both.
So,
she's
right?
both. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why the mobile identities are so important. Mm-hmm.
I just want to, for my final word, suggest that those who are interested in this poem read The Sequence Hole in the Ground, which has a series of poems that lead nicely up to this. The argument, which is really a traditional argument at the beginning of a sequence that says, then in this volume she falls in love. And we get a series of poems such as De Profundis Clamavi, which begins, the fucking isn't interesting, a point that Laura made earlier in, you know, citing the Foucault. To fuck a disgusting body against my will like a hole in the ground, thereby invoking the theme of the book. The poem Division of Fire, referring to the frictive surface, is not the limit of the touching. Again, beneath the surface, another hole in the ground. A poem called For the Boys, which seems to be addressed to men. Can you imagine, dear men, what it is to be a woman being fucked? And it goes on to talk about having her body watched and being given a score. And then a pickup poem, the young assistant to the director of, and then our poem. So this really is very much a sequence. So we like to end Poem Talk with a minute or two of Gathering Paradise, which is a chance for several of us to spread wide our narrow hands to gather a little something really poetically good to hail or commend someone or something going on in the poetry world. So Rachel's always ready to gather some paradise. Do some for us, Rachel.
Well, I've been rereading a lot of earlier modernists, mainly women, for a lot of reasons. And I've run into two things that are not like brilliantly, wonderfully fabulous, but they certainly need to be noted. One would be Nancy Cunard's long poem, Parallax, which was actually published by the Hogarth Press, Virginia and Leonard, which somehow is more promising in its title and in some of its moves than it actually reads, but nonetheless is a record of somebody who's been very affected by T.S. Eliot and is trying to deal with that. And the other is, curiously, a very flat-footed but nonetheless kind of brilliant novelist, Mae Sinclair, who is a very interesting intergenerational figure because of she's just a little bit older than everybody, but she really supported Pound and Eliot with reviews. She invented the term stream of consciousness for Dorothy Richardson, and she's written some very interesting novels, all of which have striving women in them, some of whom succeed in their striving.
Great, thank you. Some good modernist gathering, you know, early modernist gathering. That's great. Cunard is an interesting poet. Ray Armantrout, Gather Some Paradise.
Well, Kathy Wagner has a brand new book out called Nervous Device on City Lights, which is great, and I would recommend that. And I'm probably going to say her name wrong because I just thought of it right now, but Sian Nye's new critical book, Our Aesthetic Categories, the cute, the zany, and the interesting is great.
Great. And the last name is spelled N-G-A-I, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Laura Elrick, Gather Some Paradise.
Yeah, Jennifer Scapitoni's 10-year translation project of the Italian poet Emilia Roselli just came out from the University of Chicago Press. It's called Locomotrix, the Selected Poetry and Prose of Emilia Roselli. Really fabulous book and very interesting figure in pan-European poetics. And then also a new book by Patrick Durgan called PQRS, which is a very interesting, genrally complicated work. It's part essay. It's a poetics theater script, but it's also an essay. And it's out by Kenning Editions, his own press.
That's wonderful. Great suggestion from everybody. Well, that's all the fucking poems we have time for on Poem Talk today. Poem Talk at the Writer's House is a collaboration of the Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing and the Kelly Writer's House at the University of Pennsylvania and the Poetry Foundation, poetryfoundation.org. Thanks to my guests, Laura Elric, Rachel Blau Duplessis, and Ray Armantrout, and to Poem Talk's director and engineer today, Steve McLaughlin, and to our editor, as always, the self-same Steve McLaughlin. Next time on Poem Talk, Aaron Shuren, Charles Bernstein, and John Tranter join me to talk about an early poem by Ray De Palma, It Makes of Nonsense. This is Al Filreis, and I hope you'll join us again for that or another Poem Talk.